But we begin our program tonight by welcoming back our friend Marjorie Cohen. Marjorie Cohen is past president of the National Lawyers Guild, law professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, and a criminal defense attorney, legal scholar. She's the author of a number of important books, including Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues, which is just about to be published in its second edition, The United States in Torture and Rules of Engagement. Marjorie has a great website where she features a lot of articles on a wide range of issues that she's a commentator on. And we welcome you back to the show, Marjorie. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thanks for inviting me, Scott. Glad to be back.
So I guess an initial question here, and depending on what time of day it is, you know, there's an avalanche of new scandals erupting around the Trump administration almost, you know, around the clock. It's hard to keep track here. And as John Oliver in that very important show that he does weekly kind of talks about the fatigue we're all going through, just trying to keep up with, you know, the incredible explosion of scandals and leaks and the rest of it here surrounding Donald Trump and his gang of thieves, as I like to call them. But Marjorie, before we get into some of the specifics about what happened last week in terms of the appointment of a special counsel, I'd like you to give us your overview of what we've seen, which many of us believe in our lifetimes is really unprecedented in terms of the first 100, 120 days of a presidency. What are we seeing here? It's just it's hard to comprehend it, at least from my point of view.
Well, we've seen Trump attempt or set the wheels in motion to unravel the social safety net piece by piece, to try to take health care away from over 20 million people and deregulate things that are going to imperil the economy. He has appointed people to his cabinet. Each person is diametrically opposed to the goals of the particular agency each person is leading. Jeff Sessions, as Attorney General, wants to take us back to the days of prosecuting marijuana offenses, even though marijuana is legal in many states, and that's not just limited to recreational marijuana, but medical marijuana as well. He has threatened to enforce the federal law, which outlaws the use of marijuana, classifies it as a dangerous drug. Jeff Sessions has instructed his prosecutors in the Department of Justice to always ask for the maximum sentence, including mandatory minimums, which tie judges' hands so that they don't have discretion to tailor the sentence to the individual. He has taken steps to undercut the steps that were taken during the Obama administration to slow down climate change, to protect the environment, and workers' rights, rights of LGBTQ people, rights of women, reproductive rights, rights of immigrants. He has deported record numbers of people. He has instituted two Muslim bans, both of which have been stopped, at least for now, by lower federal courts. You name it, and he is attacking things that protect the rights of all of us, the poor, people of color, women, etc.
Well said. And of course, we'll be talking about the scandals that I mentioned at the top of the show, but it's important, as you just did, to summarize the political and economic agenda of this administration, which really is an attempt to bring us back to a feudalism that we've seen in the Middle Ages, it seems. But Marjorie, in terms of those scandals that have threatened his presidency, what can you tell us about the Russia connection, the news today that Michael Flynn, the former and fired national security advisor to Trump, will take the Fifth and won't testify before Congress, and of course, maybe we can begin with the appointment by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein of his appointment of Robert Mueller as special counsel to investigate charges of collusion between the Trump for President campaign and the Russian government's attempt to influence the 2016 presidential election.
Yes, well, now that we don't have the independent counsel statute anymore because Congress let it die in 1999, the Democrats didn't like Ken Starr's investigation of Clinton and the impeachment, and the Republicans didn't like the investigation of Iran-Contra, so they let this independent counsel statute die, and under that independent counsel statute, a three-judge panel would appoint an independent counsel to investigate possible crimes by high government officials. So now the Attorney General has the power to appoint a special counsel. And since Jeff Sessions supposedly recused himself from the Russia investigation, since he had basically lied under oath at a congressional hearing about contacts that he had with Russian operatives. He lied in March. He recused himself. Now, that didn't stop him from advising Trump to fire James Comey as FBI director. But then it fell to Rod Rosenstein, to the acting attorney general or the assistant attorney general, deputy attorney general, to appoint special counsel, which he did. And he appointed, as you said, Robert Mueller, former FBI director. By appointing Mueller, Rosenstein has given political cover to the Republicans, many of whom are very upset about what's happening with Trump, but are worried that if they distance themselves from him too much, that might impact their chances in the midterm elections in 2018. The problem is that Robert Mueller can be fired by Rosenstein if Trump orders Rosenstein to fire him, because he serves at the pleasure of the executive branch, because we don't have the independent counsel statute where three judges appointed the special counsel. So the charge that Mueller has is to investigate any links between the Russian government and the campaign of Donald Trump, and any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation. And that includes an alleged cover-up. So at this point, there is circumstantial evidence of improper conduct between members of the Trump administration and Russian operatives during the presidential campaign, but we have seen no concrete proof of criminal conduct. But the evidence of a cover-up continues to mount. Trump has admitted that the Russia investigation motivated him to fire FBI Director James Comey. Trump asked Comey to end the investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Trump made veiled threats to Comey about possible tapes of their conversations. Trump demanded that Comey pledge loyalty to him, but Comey refused. And Trump defensively fixated on Comey telling him three times that Trump was not an object of the investigation. Now, two more possible indications of cover-up came out today. Turns out that in March, Trump asked the director of National Intelligence, Coates, and the director of the NSA, Rogers, to deny any collusion between Russia and the Trump administration, and both refused. So these two developments also add to the case for obstruction of justice. And obstruction of justice is basically requires that a person corruptly or by use of threats obstructs, impedes, or endeavors to influence, obstruct, or impede a congressional investigation, a criminal investigation, an investigation by a department or agency of the U.S., or a federal court proceeding. But in order to be found guilty of obstruction of justice, a person has to act with an improper purpose. That's the corruptly part of the statute. And before Trump asked Comey to drop the investigation of Flynn. He was in the Oval Office. The two of them were in the Oval Office with Vice President Pence and Attorney General Sessions, and Trump asked Pence and Sessions to step out of the Oval Office before Trump asked Comey to drop the investigation of Flynn. That could be evidence of an improper purpose. Now, keep in mind, Scott, that impeachment happens in the House of Representatives, and after Ken Starr, the independent counsel, did a criminal investigation, he thought that he had substantial and credible evidence against Clinton. This was in 1998. So Starr turned over the results of his investigation to the House of Representatives, who then initiated impeachment proceedings. And impeachment is basically like a prosecutor bringing an indictment. And that's what happened to Clinton, and then the case went, and that's done by 51% of the House. Then the case went to the Senate for trial, and it would have required two-thirds of the senators to convict and remove Clinton from office, and they found him not guilty. Now, there is, in order to be impeached, a high government official, including the president, has to have committed bribery, treason, or high crimes and misdemeanors. But high crimes and misdemeanors are not defined in the Constitution. Alexander Hamilton wrote in the Federalist Papers that offenses are impeachable if they proceed from the misconduct of public men, or in other words, from the abuse or violation of some public trust. They are of a nature which may, with peculiar propriety, be denominated political, as they relate chiefly to injuries done immediately to the society itself. So if you're talking about obstruction of justice, and there also may be indications of witness tampering, because Comey asked Trump asked Comey for his loyalty, Trump made veiled threats to Comey about tapes of their conversations. So those two would constitute obstruction of justice, and witness tampering would constitute felonies, but also the sharing of classified, highly classified information that came from Israel. Trump shared it with Russian ambassador and the Russian foreign minister. While not constituting a crime, because presidents do have the power to declassify, although that's not the procedure they usually follow to declassify classified information, that still could be an impeachable offense because it is an injury done to the society itself, because it could impact our national security, one of our closest allies, significant purveyor of intelligence about the Middle East, could injure U.S. national security. Someone felt strongly enough that it could impact national security, that National Security Council staffers, that they warned the CIA and the National Security Agency that Trump had given this information to the Russians. So these are the kinds of things that could lead to impeachment. There are also other grounds that could lead to impeachment, such as sending 59 Tomahawk missiles to bomb Syria, and war crimes that Trump has committed, killing civilians in record numbers, especially in late March. But in terms of Mueller's investigation, he is going to focus on criminal investigation. Now, he has the power to indict people for criminal behavior, for crimes, but not the president. He will not. He doesn't have the power to indict the president, but again, he can turn over the results of his investigation to the House of Representatives. Now, there are a couple, Trump has decided to come out and call it a witch hunt, and even though there is bipartisan support for Mueller, he's a very upstanding, straight-arrow guy in the eyes of people on both sides of the aisle in Congress, Trump could order Rosenstein to fire Mueller, and if Rosenstein doesn't, Trump could fire Rosenstein. He could enforce or try to enforce a kind of an obscure ethics rule under the Code of Federal Regulations, which restricts newly hired government lawyers from investigating their prior law firm's clients for a year after they're hired. Trump signed an executive order in January extending that period to 2 years. Mueller's former law firm, WilmerHale, represents Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, and Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager. Now, the ethics rule can be waived by the Justice Department, and be interesting to see if the Justice Department waives that rule, and if they do, how Trump reacts, because
Marjorie?
Trump is so unpredictable, you never know.
Marjorie, I have two quick questions. We don't have a lot of time left here, and you gave some very important information there, so I appreciate the summary of a lot of the angles of this case. But David Frum, a Republican and a critic of Donald Trump, recently wrote in The Atlantic magazine that the appointment of Robert Mueller could well turn into a shield for wrongdoing, he says. A special prosecutor could wrap the investigation of the Trump-Russia matter in secrecy for months and years and ultimately fail to answer any of the important questions demanding answers. He favors, and some others favor, the convening of a congressional select committee that would be a more public investigation. Briefly, what's your view of that as an alternative to what we've been handed here with this special counsel?
Well, a Senate Select Committee is not mutually exclusive with Mueller's investigation, but the congressional investigation, and there are already four investigations, three congressional and one FBI investigation ongoing. Comey was going to testify publicly in the House Oversight Committee, and Chaffetz, who's the chair of the House Oversight Committee, postponed Comey's testimony because Comey wants to talk to Mueller. So, yes, a Senate Select Committee could be convened, but there could be some conflict between the two, especially because if a witness does testify before a congressional committee like Oliver North did during the Iran-Contra scandal, Congress can give that witness immunity, which Congress did to Oliver North, and then that would prevent a criminal prosecution of that person later. And the federal court actually upheld immunity for Oliver North, saying he couldn't be prosecuted because Congress had given him an immunity. So, yes, more public information would come out in a congressional hearing, but it may interfere with Mueller's investigation. Now, that doesn't mean to say that there are not going to be revelations coming out on a nearly daily basis. It's going to be very public. It already is. I mean, it's, and Trump is probably going to give us a lot of that information himself because he loves to tweet. He can't keep his mouth shut. So, kind of all bets are off. This is a case of first impression. I tend to think the more investigation, the better, and certainly public investigation is important for accountability. But if crimes were committed, they should be investigated by Mueller in the normal course.
Marjorie, just one last question. We have time just briefly for this one, and that is many comparisons to Watergate have been made with the recent revelations about Trump's alleged obstruction of justice and a lot of the other scandals plaguing his administration. But certainly a big difference is that we have a one-party state now. Both houses of Congress are run by Republicans, the party of Trump, as is the Supreme Court. They have a working majority on the Supreme Court now, the Republicans do. So if the Republican House of Representatives doesn't initiate impeachment proceedings and the country at large feels strongly that that should be the course of action, what is the recourse of citizens? Militant protest? Are we talking about a constitutional crisis if Republicans refuse to, follow the Constitution and initiate proceedings to prosecute high crimes and misdemeanors?
Well, I think that the same way that constituents of Republican congresspersons packed their offices, packed their town halls, protested, will be done if Congress does not do what people think it should do. And again, in 2018, these Congress people are up for re-election, and they're going to have to answer to their constituents. So even though, yes, the House is controlled by the Republicans, that does not mean necessarily that they're not going to react to demands from their constituents to pursue this. Just because they control the House. Now, I don't know that he would actually, even if he was impeached in the House of Representatives, that he would actually be convicted in the Senate by a two-thirds. I think that that's more of a long shot, but, you know, there are some Senate seats open as well, or up for grabs, I should say, as well in 2018. We don't know what's going to happen, and Trump is going to fight it tooth and nail if he doesn't melt down before. You know, it's very, very hard to predict what's going to happen, but I guess you could say it's as fascinating as it is frightening.
Well, Marjorie, I'm sad to say we're out of time. We'll invite you back soon. There's so much to talk about, and you gave excellent context for what we're going through as a country right now, so thank you so much. I would advise our listeners to visit your website, MarjorieCohn.com, where they can read one of your recent articles, and there are many there that are important, but this one relates to our discussion tonight, Did Trump Commit High Crimes and Misdemeanors? And that can be found at MarjorieCohn, C-O-H-N.com. And just one other note here, Marjorie's book, Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues, will soon be published in its second edition. Marjorie, do you have a date for when that may be coming out?
Yes, it's supposed to be published by the end of this month.
Oh, really? Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, Marjorie, I hope we can call upon you again, because every day there's a lot of new stuff coming out that's got a lot of legal bearing that important for all of us to better comprehend. So thank you so much for being here tonight, and we'll look forward to the next discussion.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Marjorie Cohn, past president of the National Lawyers Guild, law professor at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, and a criminal defense attorney, legal scholar. And again, MarjorieCohn.com is her website.